Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be delving in to a number of global equities. We've had quite a busy week over in the United States in terms of earnings from some of the US tech giants. So we're going to be looking at one company in particular, as well as some of the earnings from the FTSE 100 this week, as well as a very busy week for economic and central bank data. And to go through all of this, we have very kindly with us Alan Green. Alan, thank you very much for being with us this morning.
Hello again, John. How are you?
Yes, very, very well, thank you. Coming towards the end of what's been a very hectic week.
It has been, hasn't it?
For us here at UK Investor Magazine, it's, it feels like almost we fit two weeks worth of news and updates into 1 week this week. So very much looking forward to the weekend.
Yes, yeah, me too. It's been a busy old week on many different levels, but certainly.
Indeed. So, I mean, one of those busy elements of the week has been instalments from central banks. It's becoming increasingly common at the moment that we're seeing the Federal Reserve, ECB and Bank of England all update the markets, not only of their interest rate decisions, but of course, through their press conferences, give hints of what their thinking is on monetary policy going forward. And this week on Wednesday, we had the Federal Reserve. They hiked rates 25 basis points. And yesterday, we had the Bank of England and ECB increase the base rate by 50 basis points. However, what was quite interesting in the 2 days and two sets of instalments from the central banks is we saw very much the Europeans, so obviously the ECB and the Bank of England here, pushing forward with that 50 basis points. So they're obviously looking at inflation and still concerned about how high it is. Of course, here in the UK, it's still around 10%. But over there in the United States, inflation has been falling, and that's given the Federal Reserve enough reason to reduce the pace of their rate hikes, only 25 basis points. Although all major central banks here in Europe and, of course, in the United States have said that they're going to push on with further interest rate hikes. I mean, the ECB have actually said, look, we're going to go ahead 50 basis points in the next meeting. Bank of England said they're going to hike rates again, but haven't been as explicit in the amount. And the Federal Reserve, and this is really where a lot of the optimism has come from this week, actually said, yes, we're going to be hiking rates, but it's going to be at the lower levels because we've really seen the highest point in inflation. And that's the biggest story, I think, this week, that last year it was fears about where inflation was going and, of course, that the central bank reaction to that. But this week, I think it's a material change in the rhetoric that we're seeing from central banks. And they're really saying, yes, we still have high inflation, but we're past the worst of it now. And in fact, I think that the Bank of England said that they see inflation rates falling to 4% by the end of this year. So that led them to increase their forecasts for the UK economy. They still forecast a recession here in the UK, but it's going to be milder and shorter than they previously thought. I mean, one of their meetings last year, they actually said they saw one of the longest recessions on history, but they're rolling back on that now. And that's been reflected in markets. We're seeing the FTSE 100 above 7,800, not yet reaching those all-time highs. But what has been very interesting, Alan, is the reaction in US markets. The NASDAQ last night closed up 3%. Yeah. So it looks as though the markets are very much pricing in this easier monetary policy going forward. But do you feel now, when we're looking at where we are on markets, that a lot of this good news has been priced in and we may be in a situation that markets could have got ahead of themselves a little bit because we're still going to be seeing soggy growth. We're yet to see the worst of it, but there's still predictions that we're going to see it. And it seems as though the markets have priced in, 9 to 12 months forward, where we've gone actually past that at that point and recovered on the other side. But we've still got this tough period to come. So do you feel when we start to see the numbers deteriorate, if we see the numbers deteriorate on an economic basis, that we see a bit of volatility and maybe provide a buying opportunity for people to get into these equity markets at lower levels?
John, I'm sure we will see some volatility. That's inevitable going forward. But I think what really has resonated with me more than anything else is actually, much as I hate to applaud the central banks, I think the central banks have actually done quite a good job of managing expectations. Of course, the forecasts last year were real prophetic doom and gloom. In regard to monumental interest rate rises and extended recessions, longest recessions in history. We're certainly going into that now, but they very much set the scene last year. So I think markets last year priced those expectations in. And what we're now seeing is largely a fulfillment of those expectations to some degree. But now when you have the Bank of England governor coming on and saying, yeah, it's going to be bad. But, I think late last year, the expectations for interest rate hikes were to a maximum of 4.5% rather than 6%. That kind of is still very much in keeping with that forecast. So I think we're seeing the forecasts become reality. And as they become reality, of course, the economy is progressing. We've become used to dealing with and living in the high interest rate environment. And on the horizon now, there are prospects that the high interest rates are indeed peaking and indeed could even start to fall by the end of the year. So we've had a winter of discontent. We're, obviously on a personal level, a lot of families have been, very badly hit by the cost of energy bills, despite the assistance packages from the government. But I think it's been well managed. And I think if this pragmatic, cautious, bearish approach continues, then I think we'll see relative stability in the markets. And really, I mean, we were saying this the other week, the markets have performed remarkably well. I mean, of course, the FTSE is largely exposed to dollar earners, so that reflects the strength. And of course, it's very much a global-based indices in that regard. And of course, here we are still close to those all-time highs. And there's every prospect that as we go forward into the year, we could see the indices push through those highs and set new ones. So certainly the backdrop, whilst it's cautious, I think there are many factors in play that will act as drivers for growth, for the big energy companies, for the for commodity service providers. And, we have burgeoning economies still developing across the world. We have China coming back from COVID, of course, and all of the ramifications that will bring in terms of consumption of raw materials and everything that goes with it. So I think overall, it's been managed well so far. Looking forward, I think we can probably bet on that careful management continuing. And with that, I think will come comparative stability.
Yes. I mean, certainly looking at the markets today, after quite a strong session yesterday, it looks relatively steady out there. So it looks as though the market's content with where we are for now. So, Alan, we're going to start to get into the companies. We've got four companies we're going to discuss today. The first one that we're going to look at is Shell, which actually reported yesterday. But it was a company, of course, that was grabbing headlines. It reported a record $40 billion profit for 2022. There wasn't very much movement in the share price because they've been very forthcoming in their numbers and giving out ranges in the fourth quarter updates, and they've been giving quarterly updates. So there wasn't a huge amount of movement on the back of that because it was very much expected. But it's worth just running through those numbers, Alan, because they're profound in looking how Shell performed last year. So, I mean, what was the key takeaways from their earnings result yesterday?
Well, I mean, these are telephone numbers, aren't they? In terms of profitability, $40 billion profit, $40 billion profit in 2022, and of course driven by the higher oil and gas prices due to the Russia's invasion of the Ukraine and other factors. And I think there's a realization across the world now that despite the move to clean technology, it's not going to be as straightforward and as clean cut a path as it once might have been. And I think ironically, many EV owners, talking to people this week, I think a lot of people that have bought EVs are in some cases taking them back and trading in for conventional diesel and petrol powered cars, because of course the cost of electricity now means the cost of running an EV is an awful lot higher. So we've still got very much a very solid market for the likes of Shell too, and BP and the other oil and gas majors to feed from. But of course, Shell is all about developing oil and gas assets around the world. It's the earnings from their integrated gas and upstream and business units across the world that has been so impressive. You know, the adjusted earnings up to $39.9 billion from $19.2 billion in 2021. Q4 results really sort of demonstrated the impact of higher oil and gas prices. But of course, with that we've heard the clarion cries from journalists, pundits, people at home that these incredible profits should be taxed. And I'm not going to get into that, but there's certainly an argument for it. But at the end of the day, market forces prevail, and Shell, with its enormous network of oil and gas production facilities around the world, benefited hugely from that. But what's also interesting is that although we've kind of pushed renewables to one side, Shell's renewable unit is starting to make a small impact on their earnings. The unit recorded $1.7 billion in earnings, and also generated profit of $243 million against a loss in 2021. But Shell very much made a point of these earnings in its announcement, in its report to the markets, and also it's made acquisitions, biogas producer Nature Energy, joint ventures with various companies, including Eco Wende, Of course, that's developing an offshore wind farm, and we're seeing wind farms around the world now, contributing to power into the grid. But certainly, the majors such as Shell and BP are very much looking to the future and positioning themselves for this. And of course, with those sort of earnings, it means that they can accelerate their growth in the renewable sector simply by going out and buying companies, because they've got such an enormous cash war chest to be able to do that. So I hold Shell shares too, have done for a long time, and I think a lot of investors will have Shell as a cornerstone in their portfolios. Of course, you've got a dividend there of 3.3%, but we're slightly off year highs at £25.50 a share, currently trading just below £24 a share, and that's up from year lows of £18 per share. And of course, a few years ago, during COVID, when the oil and gas prices crashed to the floor, and in fact, one stage in 2020, they're actually paying people to take the barrels of oil away from the stockpiles. So it's been a remarkable turnaround. But I think with an eye to the future, the majors recognise they had to position themselves in renewables. And I think if you can take any comfort from these numbers at all, I fully expect Shell and probably BP and others too to use these huge profits to invest into clean technology and further accelerate that progress. So it will ultimately result in a boost in clean tech in the longer term. That's my opinion.
Yes, I mean, I think they're very much under pressure to do so. I mean, that's one of the reasons why they've said, and it's not just Shell or BP, it's, you know, it's all oil companies that are enjoying extraordinary profits from last year. The argument is that they shouldn't pay a windfall tax because they're going to be investing it in green energy, which if they do that, I think that's the right thing to do. But we need to see that follow through because, of course, at some point in the future, it's probably not going to be in 10 years, 20 years or 30 years, these are going to be renewable energy companies. They have to be. They have to transition to that business model. And if they start investing now, I think in the longer term, that will provide investors with above average returns compared to the benchmarks for those companies that are able to do that sooner rather than later. So we're going to move on now, Alan, and look at a company. It's been quite an interesting week for US tech stocks. As I said at the beginning, we had Meta that reported earlier on in the week, you know, of course, the owner of Facebook, that was up 20%. I was reading somewhere that Mark Zuckerberg recorded his biggest daily gain in his wealth, in one day. His wealth gained $12.5 billion, and that was obviously a better than expected results from Meta. But we're going to look now at Amazon. They reported after the bell last night, and it looks as though they're down 5% in the pre-market. So not as promising returns there from those results, of course, to Meta. But it's worth it going into the numbers. What were the key takeaways from Amazon?
Yeah, I think Amazon, of course, it's very much regarded as the bellwether for economies. It's such a huge entity, generates so much money that it really does accurately reflect the status and the spending power of economies around the world. Of course, they're integrated into all parts of our lives. I in fact bought something off Amazon yesterday. And my family were kind enough to buy me some tokens for my birthday last year. So I still have some of those around. And, you know, of course, you buy it. And then a few days later or a day later, it arrives. And it's the logistics network is astonishing. It really is. But certainly for Amazon shares were up yesterday. And I mean, on the year, we've seen quite a sharp recovery since Christmas. I mean, you know, the dollar price of the shares, $84 lows at the end of December, and here we are now at $112, and certainly a jump yesterday in anticipation. But still a good result. Net sales up 12% to just under $150 billion. I mean, $150 billion, that's an astonishing amount of money. Better than expected, also those are just fourth quarter sales as well. So you just think of the wealth and the turnover that company is generating over the year. Operating profits were down, but only down $2.7 billion from $3.5 billion a year ago. It's down to $2.7 billion from $3.5 billion, reflecting a restructuring charge, which also included severance costs as well. But I mean, set against the backdrop of the sort of money this company is generating, it's a blip in the ocean, barely. The division that continues to really be the powerhouse for Amazon is, of course, AWS, Amazon Web Services, the eponymous hosting giant that I think most small businesses in the UK are hosted on in some way, shape, or form. So that was huge, $5.2 billion of profits in the fourth quarter, and the company says first quarter of 2023 is expecting to deliver sales of between $121 to $126 billion and operating profits up to $4 billion. But of course, I think that's the X factor. Whether the company can generate profit is uncertain at this point. But of course, what it does reflect is the status of spending power in the USA, which seems to be holding up reasonably well. But of course, as the interest rates we've been discussing continue to bite, we're seeing interest rates fall in the US now. So I'm sure if we see an increase in sales and profitability from Amazon as the year progresses, then it's going to very much drive the tech-heavy indices tech-heavy indices, of course, such as the Nasdaq. But when you get to the size of Amazon, of course, delivering and continuing to deliver growth on that scale becomes more difficult. So really, I think it's we need to see where the U.S. economy is at in the middle of the year, and of course whether the careful management that I discussed at the start of this podcast by the central banks in managing expectations, managing economies, continues to be the case going forward.
Indeed. I mean, it is really quite interesting how things have transitioned since the midst of the pandemic with these tech stocks. They were at one point, you know, real momentum stocks and, you know, really disconnected from the underlying valuations. But it's quite interesting in the last 6 months that they've really become value stocks to some extent. You know, they've obviously increased now, but, you know, the likes of Amazon, Tesla, even down at $100, you know, that momentum is completely sapped out of them in 2022. And they've really become ones that people are looking at now for the valuation, which look a little bit more sensible than they did. Of course, they're still very racy compared to other sectors within the market, but they do look a little bit more like companies that you can value and trade on their valuation, as opposed to just purely buying into them because they're tech stocks and they dominate indices, and you have to be in them as a fund manager if you want to try and outperform the market. Because if you're underweight these tech stocks and they go off on a rally, you're going to be left behind, and it's not going to look very good for your customers. So that's quite an interesting transition that we've seen with these tech stocks. I'm going to be watching very closely in the coming quarters for their updates and obviously the earnings that they have and how the market reacts to those. So we're now going to come back to the UK, Alan. It's a company, Avacta. We wrote in the UK Investor magazine about the potential very recently for Avacta. So you've been looking at them this week, Alan. What's taken your eye?
Well, of course, this has been very much the darling of the COVID stocks throughout COVID. Of course, it was the focus was very much on the lateral flow tests and the work that Avacta were doing in that area. Of course, the FEDX SARS COVID test has continued to make progress. But pre-COVID, I mean, Avacta has always been about biotherapy-based cancer immunotherapies using human proteins and developing treatments through its technologies, including precision, to provide simpler and less invasive treatments for cancer sufferers. And indeed, the company have made substantial progress in that regard. And if we look at the share price now, I mean, Avacta is just progressing. It's making really steady progress. I mean, shares are up 4% today at 165 pence. And the chart since last year is looking very strong indeed. The stock came back from lows in March 2022 and has been trading steadily, you know, with a floor probably around the £1 level for the best part of the last 6 to 9 months, but really strong progress really since December as the company has progressed. And part of the reason for that is that, of course, in November the company raised 2 million at 95p, so that continued to hold that floor in the stock at around £1. Part of the reason for the raise, of course, was a number of developments, including the acquisition of Launch Diagnostics, which was for £24 million sterling, through the acquisition, Avacta said that it sees a significant opportunity in Europe and UK to continue to build an immunodiagnostics and molecular diagnostics value chain through acquisitions. So Launch Diagnostics, very much the first step in that regard. Then in January, the company announced, you know, going back to its core, the AVA 6000 treatment for cancer treatment, forced dose escalation before this phase one resulted in considerable success. Six tumor biopsies undertaken by the company confirmed that the tumor targeting potential of the precision technology owned by Avacta, and the treatment process was well tolerated by patients, and through that it was noted that there was much less toxicity than with standard chemotherapy. Significantly, the SDMC, the Safety Data Monitoring Committee, has recommended that these tests continue with higher doses of the AVA6000 for phase 1B in future studies. But the results from the ongoing studies will complete in the first half of the year. So very much being driven by that, because of course, cancer sufferers, chemotherapy, the invasive nature and the trauma that it causes patients is well known. And this treatment is looking very effective indeed, but also without the side effects that with chemotherapy that are so well documented. So a very, very bright future. Of course, Dr. Alistair Smith has been at the helm of the company all the way through. Very much he doesn't get distracted by trends in the market. He's just very focused on what the company does. I saw Alistair present at a conference a few years ago, was very impressed by his vision for the company, and that continues today. And he's surrounded by a very strong board of leading figures within the industry, and I think Avacta now is on the verge of making a breakthrough. And certainly, if you look at the share price performance, I think we're set to spring on and move on to the next level.
Indeed. We had Charlie Archer write an article for us very recently and said Avacta is on the verge of FTSE AIM greatness. Yes. Now, all eyes will be on the further developments in these trials of the therapy. And we watch very closely for those results. So they'll be highly anticipated. So moving on now, Alan, to the last company we're going to look at today. It's Aquis. Of course, they've got the Aquis Exchange as well as trading venues for main markets equities across Europe. So what's the latest update from them?
Yeah, Aquis, it really has changed, hasn't it, John? We were, of course, the focus has been on AIM and, of course, FTSE main market. And what has previously been OFX, ISDX, Next Exchange, and so on, finally became Aquis a few years ago. And with that change, I think it really finally came of age, and everything it's done over the past 2 to 3 years, led by Alistair Haynes, chief executive, and of course chairman Glenn Collison, who came in to replace Nicola Beattie just over a year ago, very much reaffirms that. So as you say, Aquis, AQX is the epicode, is the Aquis Exchange. The Aquis Exchange operates multilateral trading facilities across Europe. It has a lit order book. Offers lower toxicity and risk than perhaps other similar multilateral facilities. Of course, there's AQSE, which is the Aquis stock market. Now that provides a primary and secondary markets for trading. Of course, a listing there is for the IPO process, and then if the company does well, it then becomes what's called an apex company, and the apex companies can now be traded electronically. And that really, I think, over the years has been the biggest hindrance to a company looking to list on Aquis. With that change, we bring in far greater liquidity, and of course the opportunity for companies to list on Aquis at a fraction of the cost that it would take to list on AIM or other exchanges. And that's been the big attraction. So companies with a decent offering have been able to get their listing away. And of course, if they're able to deliver on their growth vision, then of course they become an apex stock, which helps that liquidity because it introduces them to retail investors trading electronically. And that's the key to it. So the company has delivered steady progress. Also, of course, John, you mentioned that there's Aquis Technologies, which underlies and underpins everything, and that is the software and technology team and infrastructure that provides and underwrites, if you like, the exchange and everything that the company can offer. And it provides market gateways, of course, for banks, brokers, and investment firms. So through the year, we've seen, certainly the last year, we've seen the chairman, Glenn Collinson, stepping up and buying shares. We've seen developments from the company. In July last year, the company announced that its Apex stocks are now trading on Hargreaves Lansdown. Of course, Hargreaves Lansdown is the largest retail platform in the UK, and for people to be able to invest and buy and sell Aquis stocks is a big jump forward, and has a huge impact on liquidity for some of these smaller companies. An independent note out in September last year, huge European IR firm Pedrosa rated Aquis a huge efficient source of funds for European companies, and indeed we're seeing a lot of dual lists and companies listing on Frankfurt also having dual listing in London on the Aquis as well. Then in December, IG Markets, of course, a huge provider of trading services, IG announced that it had expanded its offering with Aquis listed stocks. So that's again boosting liquidity for companies looking to list on Aquis. And then, of course, we have a trading update from the company at the end of January last week. The company said it's trading in line with expectations. Full year is expected in line. So not really, I think, reflected by the share price performance. I think it's been a fairly lackluster year for the shares. Of course, October last year, we were trading at year lows around £2.70 a share, now trading £3.70 a share, but still somewhere off year highs of £5.80 a share. So I'd expect a little run in the stocks probably up to March the 30th, because I think what we will see in time is with the retail service providers now able to offer electronic trading facilities in leading Aquis stocks, we're going to see a boost in volume, and that will of course feed through to the bottom line.
Indeed. There's some very exciting companies actually on Aquis, yeah. So certainly worth having a look at some of those. So thank you, Alan. Just to run through the companies that we discussed today, first of all was Shell, which has a ticker of SHEL. It was then Amazon, which of course trades over in the United States under a ticker AMZN. It was then Avacta with a ticker of AVCT. And we just finished off with the Aquis Stock Exchange, which has a ticker of AQX. Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you, John.
So just as a note to listeners, we do have a number of virtual events coming up. We have investment trusts, we have growth companies. Do check out the events section on the UK Investor Magazine. Have a look through those and get yourself signed up. So I hope to see you there, and thank you very much for listening to the podcast.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember all investment involves risk.